Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with
Dawn Ursula.
And she's starring in Lorraine Hansberry's legendary play, A Raisin in the Sun, at Arena Stage from March 31st to May 7th. Dawn, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
This is a legendary work. I mean, one of the greatest and most important plays of all time. But in case someone's been living under a rock, tell them what it's about.
Okay, so A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, which inspired by a poem written by Langston Hughes. I believe the poem is called Harlem.
And the line is,
"What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun?"
So that's where the title comes from.
That's where the title comes from. And we meet a family called the Youngers, who and members of the family, and it's a very special weekend. It's a Friday morning we meet them. The next day, a check is arriving with a lot of money. Because the patriarch of the family, Walter, Big Walter, has passed away recently. And this money is going to really change their lives. So it's, even though this was written by Lorraine in 1959, that's what I think when it, the year it appeared on Broadway, the story of this family and what they are trying to achieve and the obstacles is so incredibly present, which is why it is a classic. And it's amazing. Ms. Hansberry was just a genius. She was a genius. She
pretty
was
sure
touched by genius. By
I think pretty sure she died only like a couple years after, in like 65.
Oh, yeah. And she died so young. She was 34. She died of cancer.
But she left us with this. What's her gift? I mean, you've been grappling with the text over and over again, getting ready for this. But like, is it how she turned her phrases or just the how she could weave the social commentary? Or what is her, what about her as a writer are you like admiring as you read it more?
All of that. Honestly, yeah. You know, sometimes there are works of art or theater or plays where the message is just really dumped heavily into your lap. I understand what
you're
trying
to tell me. A little
preachy. And there's nothing like that in this. You are sucked in and drawn to and invested in these people who you recognize immediately. And even if you're not black, if you're not African America, there is mama, there is the husband, there is the wife, there is the child, there's the sister. Everybody has things that they're wanting. Going to school, needing money for school, trying to kill the cockroaches that you can't seem to get rid of, having big dreams and desires for a better life. And she incorporates these huge ideas and yet the mundane, which we understand so clearly. I mean, in the first scene, we watch eggs being scrambled on stage. It's real, real, real life.
Everyone can relate to that.
Everybody can relate to get the kid to school on time. There is that. And at the same time, the poetry that she also puts in, that in our moments of great need, I think any of us actually have those moments when we speak poetically, when our hearts and our souls are just striving for something that's right out of reach. You're like, wow, that was really profound.
You just have a lot of money right now.
Right, but she does that, and it doesn't feel out of place. It doesn't feel like you've switched from one play to another. It's all right there, and but it's so real. It's so real, and it's still so many of the things. And she covers so much.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, when I want you to think about family life and what we're going through today, we are going through all of that.
Yeah.
The very specific, ha, I got to get everybody out the door to work. And yet, what is it that I really want to do with my life? And she weaves that, and we just recognize it all. And it's beautiful.
It's great. I want to hone in on something you said that was awesome about about how sort of about the mundane everyday things as a way of, you know, tapping into these larger issues. But it's sort of presented through this everyday prism.
Yeah.
When you were saying that, it reminded me of I was backstage in at the Oscars when Viola Davis came back. Well, that whole night was crazy, but no, let's stay on point. But so Viola Davis comes back, you know, holding her Oscar, and she's talking, and she said what she loves so much about Fences, obviously August Wilson, another great play, right? She said she loved that it was a chance to just show everyday people. She
That's
said,
fine.
She said, not every movie has to be something like a big didactic kind of a thing. She said what she loved about that part was that Denzel's character reminded her of her dad. Mm-hmm. And just because they lived and breathed, it's a story worth telling. So
yes.
That's what I always thought of Raising in the Sun in that light, that
Absolutely.
It always kind of focuses on that. So, you know, just what's your take on sort of what Viola was saying about, you know, let's have more plays on everyday folk.
On everyday folk, people that we recognize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Walter Lee, his profession is...
This is the Sun.
This is the Sun, yes. This is Walter Lee is Big Walter's son, and... the quote-unquote man of the house. and, you know, he works as a chauffeur. You could substitute him with an Uber driver. Of today. Seriously.
That's who, the equivalent.
Yeah, exactly. Who is, you know, working their Uber driving car service because they want something better for themselves and their wife and their son. Mm. And they have desires and ideas and hopes for something better than their present, and the conditions in which they are living always seem to trip them up. And it's not for lack of working hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, or making sacrifices. I mean, how many people could we talk to, we know, who are living with other relatives under the same roof? Because if we financially collaborate and we live in these conditions, which make us terribly unhappy because we're all on top of each other in two bedrooms and there's six of us, but if we do this for a little bit, this little short time, then we can get ahead to get to that other place. And then life starts happening and the world comes in, and then there are laws enacted and that make it hard to impossible.
Explain in the context of the play what the sort of laws are with the neighborhood you know, suburbia's blowing up, but it's not open to everyone. You know, explain to sort of the backdrop.
So, you know, here the younger family, they want to buy a home.
Chicago. Okay.
They want to buy a home. This is at a time when it was, you know, buying a home outside of the Black neighborhood was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, we all know, well, maybe we don't. There used to be laws that you could not purchase a home if you were not of the same race of the people who were already in these neighborhoods.
Crazy.
They were not allowed to, like in these suburban white neighborhoods, they were legally not allowed to sell. So this family wants to buy a home, and they find a home. And I hope, spoiler alert, you know, the matriarch, Lena, purchases a home in a white neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a source of conflict, also for the younger family, because this is at a time when moving into a neighborhood like this is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine Hansberry, her whole history. Oh, please look up Lorraine Hansberry's personal history of moving into a suburban white neighborhood, having the means, her parents are professionals,
right,
having the money and the means, moving out there. And Lorraine, as a child, almost died from the people who did not want them there attacking the house. And there are stories about her mother, when dad was not home, staying up all night with a pistol in case they were attacked.
So this is semi-autobiographical. I mean, they always say write what you know, and that's this. That's what makes it great.
That's what makes it amazing, you know? So, but still, this younger family is willing to take that chance because, well, they deserve to live in a home.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most, for me, one of the most heartbreaking lines that Ruth has, which is a character that I play, when she asks Lena about the home that she's purchased, is there a lot of sunlight? And you just think about what it means to live in a place where your abode, your home, lacks sunlight.
Mm.
What that alone does to your psyche, does to your emotions, does to you to be able to continue to have the energy and the desire, let alone the good attitude, to move forward every day.
Yeah. And that ironically plays into the title too, is the Raisin in the Sun.
Yes,
yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. When did you watch the movie version? Because I mean, that's before we got on here. We were geeking out about Ruby Dee and Sidney Poitier, and actually they were in the original stage version too,
yes.
Right? And then they came to the movie, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Honestly, for me, it's been many years, so that it's kind of a faint memory, which I'm kind of glad of.
Yeah, you can make it your own thing. Yeah.
Exactly. You don't have what I kind of describe as the iconic bubble of someone else floating around you going, I did that differently.
The ghost of Ruby Dee just watching your every move.
I'm sorry, Ruby. So, but yeah, just such amazing footsteps to try to follow in.
Talk about the character herself, Ruth. I mean, why is it so juicy? I mean, you're keeping this family intact. Like you're saying, you're all on top of each other in the same place, which, double-edged sword, it brings you closer, but you get on each other's nerves a little bit.
You need room. You know, it's the very first scene of the play. It's Ruth. You see Ruth on stage. Mm-hmm. Right as she's getting everybody up and out for the day. And you meet all the other cast of characters and the people that live in the household. The whole younger family gets up one by one. To give you a little more background also about where they're living, they share a bathroom not only with each other, but with the other people that live in their building. There's like a bathroom out in the hallway, and they
like dorm style,
exactly. Can you imagine? And they, you know, and you could tell they're racing with the other neighbors. Everybody's got to get up and get dressed and get to work on time, and they're racing with the other neighbors to go and use the bathroom to get ready. And so you see Ruth get up first, get everybody up, and everybody kind of comes and goes about their day, and she is the steadfast anchor, and it's just so real. And as a mom, as a wife, as a woman, that role has not changed. And yet she still has her own work to do.
Yeah.
You know, she has her jobs to do, because she is contributing financially to the well-being of everyone in that house as well. But that doesn't mean that she has to get a kid, and you get breakfast, and here's your, don't forget your books, go to school, honey, husband, work. Yeah. Okay, now you're off to school. What do you need?
Right.
You know, and it's such a testament, again, to Lorraine understanding the dynamics of women and people and family to write this character. And there are so many moments when Ruth is on stage just listening and understanding and being supportive. And, you know, how many of our mothers can we pay homage to who are just there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Is the way it's staged visually at Arena, is it Fitz Chandler?
Yes.
Right? Love it there. Is the way it's staged, do you guys kind of contribute to the claustrophobia? You know, you're in that apartment.
Yes. As a matter of fact, Donald Eastman, who's our set designer, you know, you were in the round. So exciting to be in the round. And yet he has the space that we could have been moving around in is even condensed, even smaller. So there's kind of like
on
purpose. So there's this our living space within the actual round space that the audience gets to sit around to watch us live. And it's these two cramped rooms, and then there's the kind of offshoots of the other rooms that you don't see, where we kind of exit and enter from, that, you know, are the separate bedrooms. But it so helps to feel that tightness. And there are times, which is really kind of funny, when we're in rehearsal and we're kind of bumping into each other. You know, we're working out the blocking where we're going to go. I'm like, oh, you're there. I want to go here. Like, oh, my goodness.
I need to get to the bathroom.
We're living this, you know. And it's great.
what makes Walter Lee such a great character? That's the Poitier character.
Oh, yeah. He's every man. And he's such a hungry, beautiful soul. And she's ridden him so that he just taps right to the core of when you want more, you're smarter than, you're bigger than your circumstances.
Right. You're just raging to get out of that and become what you know you can be.
Yes, and you just need the chance.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this plan. He knows it's going to work.
What's his plan? Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! His plan is to purchase with some friends a liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thought it out. He's planned it out. And, you know, sidebar. Again, Lauren Hansberry being kind of prolific. Chose a liquor store.
Nah,
what right. is she kind of saying?
Right.
You know, about dire circumstances and
right.
people and...
Right.
I won't go down that road.
Sure, but okay, food for thought. That's a good food for thought.
You just chew on that. You chew on that.
It wasn't by accident, I'm sure.
It wasn't by accident. This woman was smart, and she's saying something here. And spoiler alert again, he doesn't get the liquor store,
right?
also saying something else there.
So many layers.
So many layers to this. And yet, his plan, if you think about it, he probably would have been successful had he been able to do this. But he is dying to do this deal. And around him in the world, he sees white men, the men that he drives or the man that he drives for. And he sees other people out there who are making these deals, who are taking these chances and who are being successful. And why not him? All he needs is a shot. And he has dreams not only for himself. That's the other thing that she weaves in so beautifully. Mm-hmm. Two other moments specifically that pop out in mind.
Let's hit him.
When he has it, right? When he's so desperate, he says, "I want to give my wife a pearl necklace. Doesn't she deserve it?
Mm.
I think she deserves it. I'm a man, and I say, who determines what woman gets to wear a pearl necklace?
Right.
I say she deserves it. I want to give it to her."
Right.
And this is so heartbreaking. And it's so truthful. Why not?
Yeah.
And the other thing is he lays out this dream. It's such a gorgeous speech he has when he's talking to his son, Travis. And he's just daydreaming out loud to him about what he sees as his life. "I come home from work. Ruth greets me. We kiss. We go in the house. I wave at my gardener. Hey, Jefferson, how you doing?" He's named his gardener. "I walk in the house. I come up to your room. You, now a young man, a teenager, sitting on the floor, and you have all these catalogs for all these schools that you want to go to. And I'm going to say to you, son, pick one and you'll go. Because I have the means to send you to wherever you want to go, to be the man you want to be."
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that what everybody wants for their kids?
It's that simple.
It's just that simple.
It is. If only it was that
if
simple.
If only it was.
Right? Right? It should be
that
simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Then society gets in the way.
That's right.
Awesome. You mentioned sort of that it could easily be, he could be an Uber driver or whatever,
yep.
But talk more in terms of, you know, seeing this now in 2017, how just super relevant it still is.
It's interesting because I've had some conversations with some friends of mine recently, and they were kind of like, "Oh, raising in the sun, it's been done so much." And I'm like, "You don't understand. It's a reason. There's a reason this is a classic and it does not go away.
Right.
And you need to come and have the experience and sit down because there's so much you've forgotten."
Yeah.
About this play.
And it reveals itself on mother layers depending what era you watch it in.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So much so. I mean, when Carl Lindner comes on stage and starts talking about the other, you get chills because of what he's saying back then that we are staring dead in the face right now.
History repeats itself.
It does.
Or it rhymes.
Yeah. You know, and she also has, I mean, she's got these incredible characters. There's a wonderful character Asagai, who is one of Benita, who is Walter Lee Younger's sister, who goes to college. It's one of her suitors. And he comes in and he starts talking about change and the future and how when his hope to return to Africa and be a great man and stop illiteracy and poverty and that one day the future could be that he is a great man and he makes great change. And then in the future, other people will have different ideas from him and they'll want him out of office and they'll want to take over. And this is the cycle of life.
Right.
It's like, Lorraine, who are you that you thought of all this? So it's so present in so many ways. It's so present.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, if you needed any more reason to come, there it is. Just watching what's going on around
me. Really?
Awesome. Before we go, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up? How'd you get into acting?
Wow. I claim Virginia as home, although I was born in Brooklyn.
Okay.
But I've lived so much in the Virginia area. This is home for me, Virginia, D.C., Maryland.
When you moved down here, where in Virginia did you come to?
We first were in Reston, Virginia for a while, and then we moved to Charlottesville, where my family, my parents still live in Charlottesville.
Awesome.
So I was in Northern Virginia for a little while.
Awesome. Are you locally based, or are you still back and forth in New York? Or?
I am. I live right here in PG County.
Awesome.
I've been in the D.C. area doing theater since 2000. I can't believe it's been that long.
Wow. Well, how did you get started in it originally, into acting?
You know,
like school productions or...
I did forensics in high school, which everyone always thinks was like, oh, you dissected? No. It was like speech and debate. But we called it forensics. And I did recitations of poetry and prose and competed. And that was my first kind of start. And then that moved into doing some theater in high school. And then I did some in undergrad and just kind
of. Do you remember any of the plays?
Oh,
like in undergrad, what you did or in high school?
Yeah, well, I did For Colored Girls in undergrad by Ntozake Shange. That was momentous. Yeah. It was probably
life-changing.
Where
were you in college? Where was this?
UVA.
Oh,
I'm
perfect.
I'm Oahu, yes.
Right.
yeah. So
awesome.
It's been great. And I came to the D.C. area thinking I was going to go out to New York or L.A. after a few years here. And I loved it. I just fell in love with the theater community and the work that was here. This is, again, 17 years ago. It makes me cry to say that. 17 years ago. And the D.C. theater has just blossomed and bloomed and grown so much in that time. And I'm really lucky to call it home.
Have you done other stuff at Arena before?
One other play at Arena, a new play called Love in Afghanistan by Charles Randolph Wright, directed by Lucy DeBergen. And I did that in the beautiful Cogard, the Cradle Theater.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what other local productions might our listeners have seen you in? Not necessarily Arena, but all around.
I'm so lucky I get to work a lot locally. And I did Angels in America 1 and 2 at Roundhouse not too long ago. I did an incredible one-woman show written by Kellyanne Sennett Jennings called Queen's Girl in the World at Theater J.
Cool.
And I'm a company member with Woolly Mammoth and Everyman Theater in Baltimore, so I get to do an amazing work with both those theater companies.
That's awesome.
Too, yeah.
And now the big one, Raising in the Sun.
One, yes,
when
exactly.
You were cast in that in such a legendary role, were you blown away?
Oh, yes. And so much thanks to Tazewell Thompson, the director, as well as to Molly and all the folks at Arena for bringing me in and having me as a part of it. It's incredible.
What's the final pitch? Why should they come?
You know, there are some plays in which I feel you come to see it and your soul is, okay, this is going to sound real.
Okay. No, it's true. You know you're talking to. I'm all about this.
Sometimes I get a little lofty here.
No, it's okay. The money bite.
Okay?
About to, here we go, Jason. 22:45. Money bite.
It feels like there are some places where you go and your essence is validated.
Phew.
Your humanity is validated, and yet you're also enlightened. And this is one of those plays that does it. And there are not that many that live for this long where people are grasping to do it, still do it over and over again because she does.
Yeah. And 60 years from now, I'm sure it'll still be, it'll be singing in something that you and I can't even fathom now, but it's going to live on and comment on something then too. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, come get your essence validated. March 31st to May 7th, the essence validating Raisin in the Sun. Dawn Ursula, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're great.